is able to contort his body. It's almost like he doesn't have any bones in his body. Again, Gumpy-like with how he's able to make things happen.
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop Podcast, episode 230. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. First up, we have scout and writer Emory Hunt of FootballGamePlan.com. He comes on to discuss the draft prospects of Bronson Cafusi and Mitch Matthews. Matt and I then discuss the upcoming national championship chases for men's volleyball and rugby. And we also discuss what we think will happen for Matthews and Cafusi in the draft. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast. Get all of your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Join our conversation at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. Welcoming to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shot Podcast, first-time guest Emory Hunt. He is the CEO, founder, and analyst at Football Game Plan. He's a member of basically every football writing association that you can be, it looks like. Former college running back, coach, color commentator, speaker, and author. Emory, welcome to the podcast.
Well, Adam, I appreciate you guys having me on.
So we, of course, as BYU podcast, the last couple of years has been kind of fun to follow the draft as we've had a couple of defensive players, including Ziggy Ansah and Kyle Van Noy, get drafted fairly high. This year, it's another defensive prospect, defensive end, Bronson Cafusi. So I wanted to start out there, Emory. What do you see in Bronson, both the good and the bad? And then where do you think he might end up round-wise in the draft later this month?
Well, initially what I see with Bronson is a guy that has tremendous size. And I know size is not a skill, but I think in his case, he utilizes his size well because I think he's strong off the ball. He's able to extend with his arm, so he plays with good length. You see a lot of – sometimes you see some guys that are his height and his size that play like a small outside linebacker, but he plays like a big defensive end, and you like that about his game. I think he's strictly a defensive end in the 4-3 scheme. He can play over the tight end, I believe. I don't think he has the quick twitch muscles to be a quote-unquote 7 technique or a pass rusher that gets after the quarterback on a consistent basis. I think he can do a solid job versus the run and utilize that strength in holding the line of scrimmage. Now on the flip side, some things he has to work on. I think when you are that height, you have to work extra hard to play with better pad level. And right now he's playing way too high. And a lot of times that doesn't allow him the opportunity to get around the corner or bend the edge, as they like to say. And when you play high, guys can easily get into your chest and control you. And you see that a lot with offensive linemen. They're beating him to the punch quickly first, and then they're moving him out the way, or he's getting escorted out of the club, we like to say. So those are the things he'll have to work on as he moves forward.
So tell me, when you look at a prospect like him, obviously I think you're not alone. A lot of draft analysts, they like the size, they like the athletic ability, but they worry about some of the things you mentioned. As far as like where in the draft you project him to go, a lot of projections see him third, fourth, or fifth round. Do you think that's the right place and the right scheme, or do you think he might fall a little farther down than that?
I think he'll be a little bit further down than that if we're being completely honest. I think because he doesn't have those elite-level traits, and right now he's just a tall, big body that has a lot of strength, I think the league would feel as though they can get that guy later. Unless you're a difference maker up front, a guy that can take the ball away, get to the quarterback, I think he would go higher. But right now, if I had to make a guess, I would say 6th, 7th round is where he will probably end up.
Yeah, that's where some of the projections seem to have him. But though that seems to be kind of all over the board, as it is some of those later rounds as people look at it. Another prospect on the other side of the ball for BYU is wide receiver Mitch Matthews, who at the BYU Pro Day got a very good 40 time and, obviously is a big wide receiver as well. What do you see when you scout Mitch Matthews?
You know what? I had to go back to an old school player to find a comparison, and I think it fits perfectly. I think he really plays a lot like Chris Collinsworth did. You know, yeah. A long, angular guy that is Gumby-like with his athleticism. You'll see him contort his body in weird ways, but it works for him, and he's able to come up with the catch. And the fact that he's able to run fast and jump high, that's just icing on the cake. But I love the fact that he will make a quarterback look great because he has a tremendous catch radius because he can lay out for passes. He can make that contested catch. He does a great job in sacrificing for a football that may be a little bit behind him. And that just helps out your quarterback. And I think the one thing you'll see him do moving forward, he'll fill out his frame and get up to maybe 230, 235. They'll move him inside as a bigger wide receiver, almost like a Marcus Colson, a pseudo inside receiver, tight end type in his new day and age. And I think he'll have a long career because, one, he has tremendous hands. He can high point the football. And like I said before, the effort is there because he's able to lay out for passes.
So what do you see as you scouted him? What are the things you mentioned? He's going to have to bulk up a little bit, which I think most BYU fans would say, having watched him for the last few years. He's a pretty skinny guy. What else does he need to work on, or what other weaknesses do you see in his game?
I think a lot of his weaknesses or areas of improvement, I like to say, comes from the fact that he doesn't have that core strength. So you'll see him get bumped off a route or rerouted by defensive backs. And as you become stronger, you're going to be able to muscle through those routes and power through certain routes and be able to beat bump press and power through defenders when they have their hands on you and still be able to stay on track and run your route. So I think a lot of his issues stem from him not being the strongest guy, which is something you can improve on. Now, if he had technical flaws, then it would be an issue. But I don't think he has technical flaws. Obviously, you can work on a little bit of route running, but that's something that can easily be obtained with repetition. But as far as catching and seeing the football, there's no problem right there. And that, to me, is the most important thing you need as a receiver. Everything else can be taught. So I think he has the core traits that you need to succeed. I think everything else will come in time, the route running and also the strength.
Well, yeah, I love the old school comparison of Chris Collinsworth. I hadn't thought of that one, but that's a good one. It fits his body type and his game pretty well.
Yeah, it was amazing because when I saw him play, I was like, you know, he's not a guy that I've seen recently. And I'm thinking, like, you know what? He kind of reminds me of Chris Collinsworth, just a wiry guy, but tall and is able to contort his body. It's almost like he doesn't have any bones in his body. Again, gumpy-like with how he's able to make things happen. And he's just a tremendous player. I'm surprised he hadn't gotten enough pub going into this draft process. So it's good to see him getting some love later on as we were 2 weeks away from the NFL draft.
So let me talk to you about that as we are 2 weeks away. I think originally in most projections, he wasn't there. The pro day, I think, turned some eyes because I think he graded out faster than what maybe he sometimes shows on the field because of what he was asked to do at BYU. Is this a guy now that the Chiefs seem to be interested, rumors of Chiefs and Packers and maybe a couple other teams, is this a guy that a couple weeks ago might have been a rookie free agent that now you think has slipped his way somewhere into the draft?
I think so. I mean, especially when you look at some of the teams, now you mentioned the Kansas City Chiefs, they definitely need help at wide receiver. You also look at a team maybe like the New Orleans Saints need help at receiver with Marcus Colson getting up there in age. And I think he just retired, obviously, actually. So there's a bunch of teams that need help at wide receiver. The Patriots constantly need help. The Falcons would be wise to get a guy like Matthews, I think, could be an ideal third receiver and allow Mohamed Sanu to play inside, where I think he would be better suited. So there's a bunch of teams that I think can use a guy like Matthews because of his unique skill set. I think he can play inside or out. And with his ability to make the contested catch and high point the football, he's going to be an ideal threat, I believe, inside the red zone.
Yeah, he certainly was for BYU the last few years a great red zone target for Taysom Hill and Tanner Mangum. Let's switch to the draft as a whole. I wanted to ask, we always talk QBs because everyone talks QBs. It seems to be a favorite topic when you're talking about football. Obviously, this year there's a lot of division, as I read analysts on the QBs and whether they're first-round talents or not, or whether they're those franchise guys. When you look at those top quarterback prospects, do any of them like speak to you as franchise guys, or do you think this could be a year where some of these guys are overdrafted?
I think it's going to be a year where a lot of guys are overdrafted, but I will say this in the same breath. There are guys that you can win football games with. I think a lot of the major media is looking at the wrong scope and looking at the wrong crop of guys. in my opinion, the best quarterback in his draft class is Cordell Jones, and I gave him a second round grade. So I think you can win with Cordell Jones. He still has some things that he has to smooth out in his game, which is why I wouldn't take him in the first round. But second round, yes, I would definitely grab him and work with him. Same can be said for guys like Cody Kessler. You look at Dak Prescott, Vernon Adams, another sleeper guy, and Dalen Williams out of Dartmouth, I think is a small school talent that is the next Russell Wilson if he's getting the opportunity. Is someone that people should keep an eye on. Very impressive kid coming out the Ivy League. But you got Jared Goff that I gave a third-round grade to. And Wentz, I know, is a guy that's getting a lot of hype, but I gave him a fourth-round grade, which basically says you can win with him, but you have to make sure you're doing what you have to do to keep him in positive situations, so to speak. You want to Ryan Fitzpatrick, curtail the game plan like you do for Ryan Fitzpatrick. You want to minimize his throws, allow him to operate off play action, utilize his athleticism, and he can be successful. But if you try to get out there and force him to throw the football 28 to 35 times a game, you're putting yourself in danger offensively.
Now, you mentioned, I believe it's Dalen Williams right out of Dartmouth.
Correct.
I was watching some of your videos. I hadn't even heard his name, so it was cool to learn about him on your website. I was curious, so forget about quarterbacks here for a second. Is there another guy that nobody's talking about that you think could get drafted and be a difference maker within the next year or two?
Absolutely, man. There's a ton of guys. I think when you look at, and I'll give you two. I'll give you a guy that played at a major school and a guy that's a small college guy. And the first small college guy is running back Marshawn Coppridge out of Illinois State. When you watch him play, he instantly jumps out at you on film as a guy that you can see, like, hey, he is a legit game breaker. And he reminds me a lot of Doug Martin and what he brings to the table for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And the other guy, I look at Tyler Boyd out of Pitt. It amazes me how all he's done was set records at Pitt. He may not be the fastest, he may not be the most explosive, but he's productive. He has the best hands, I think, in this year's draft class. He's athletic. Now, he may not be fast, but he's definitely athletic. And all you need to know about him is that they have him back there returning punts, which tells you a lot about his shiftiness, his quickness, and his footwork, which is all you need to get open as a wide receiver. You don't have to have the blazing speed. And he definitely was able to play in the backfield some as a running back. I saw that versus Miami. So he's versatile. And I think his game compares to Keenan Allen. People were saying the same exact things about Keenan Allen when he came out of Cal. And he's become a premier talent in the NFL, very good receiver in the NFL. I think Boyd is being vastly underrated right now, even though I think he has the same type of skills as Allen does.
Yeah, I was giving you a hard time before we started recording about how much football it is that you must watch, because you know, your website has a ton of small college guys that profiles some of the pro days at some of the smaller colleges. Tell me about how you do that. I mean, most of these guys are going to be ignored by the national media as a whole, and you're spending time on them. You know, and obviously, this every year there's small college guys that end up getting drafted higher than they're predicted. What do you see is the kind of the gap, if you will, in the national coverage? Is it just a matter of who people watched on Saturdays for college football, or do you think it's more of just the national people want to talk about national guys?
You know what? That's a great question, because I think a lot of it is twofold. A lot of it, number one, has to do with the fact that people don't watch a lot of football. Even the guys that talk football nationally don't watch a lot of football. The perception is that they do, but they don't. And so they're given information by their producers. And so they're going to talk to what is most popular. If you look at how the NFL, let's say NFL Sunday morning shows on ESPN or NFL Network, if you just watch those shows, you think the NFL only has six teams.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So they'll talk about the same. And if you're watching these NFL draft shows right now, I think Path to the Draft is one of the bigger ones. They're only talking about the same 15 prospects. So And when you ask them about another one, they'll say, oh, I haven't, you know, I haven't seen him, or this is something new. When you question that, like, well, how, if you spend all year long covering the draft? For us, I can easily say, yeah, I haven't seen this guy, because we're also doing CFL, NFL, college football, you know, so I have a quote unquote excuse. And as far as on the writing side, a lot of these writers, quite honestly, just parrot what they hear off TV and don't do original work. So they'll just take like a top five list, rearrange it, and it becomes their list, which is fine. But you're cheating yourself from, if you really want to do this or really want to be an evaluator, then your net should be cast wide. You should never turn down film. And when you, let's say you look at, you said you watched the Dalen Williams clip.
Yeah.
Just by watching him, and if you had no idea that he went to Dartmouth or whatever, you would just look at that film and say, man, this guy can play.
I thought, I'll tell you what, never heard his name before. I never heard his name before, Emery, and I watched that tape, and I thought exactly what you said. I thought, wow, if this guy played even at a small non-Power 5 conference team, he'd be getting a major, major pub, because it just looked – he looked so smooth. He did everything that you'd ask a quarterback to do. But, again, he played at Dartmouth, so he's not going to be one of those 15 prospects you talk about.
Yeah, it's crazy, because people would say, well, he played at Dartmouth or he played in the Ivy League, yet they're talking about Carson Wentz going top five. You know, he played in the FCS as well. Still Division I football, and it's amazing to see that. And it's sad, because you have a lot of these talented guys. But it's good for me, because let's say last year, I want to say in February, I did a video on James O'Shaughnessy, the tight end from Illinois State. I saw him at the FCS championship game, and I was like, this guy got talent. So I went back, popped in the film, broke his game down, did a small college spotlight on him. No one talked about O'Shaughnessy from February to April. He gets drafted in the fifth round. Now everyone is scrambling on, well, who the heck the Chiefs drafted in the fifth round and James O'Shaughnessy. And here's this one video that shows who this guy is. Same with Trey Walker. Rest in peace. Trey Walker just passed away. Same with him. No one knew who he was except football game plan, because I think a lot of people on both ends tend to discredit players because of the school and think, well, you can't be good because you're at a lower school. But see, I played at Louisiana Lafayette, so they would technically call that a small school. But I remember telling the story about how we found out who Josh McCown was, because we lost to Sam Houston State.
Right.
He's a quarterback, you know. So, I mean, it's interesting how people just don't appreciate the amount of talent that's out there in college football by only focusing on the same 13 teams in the Power Five.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a perfect segue, as we call it in the radio business, Emery, to talk. Give a chance for you to plug what you do and where we can find more of this content that you and your team generate. Not just about the draft, as you mentioned, you guys cover college football, the CFL, and basically anywhere they play football, you guys seem to have some coverage. So tell us the best way to check out what you guys do.
Well, they could hit us up on they could hit me up on Twitter at @FBallGamePlan, and on our website footballgameplan.com, our YouTube channel at youtube.com/footballgameplan, and be sure to check out our two latest book releases, Football: A Love Story and What Did Football Teach Me? We have over 100 current, former players, coaches, executives, scouts, analysts from the high school level all the way up to women's tackle football to the NFL. They're just talking about what they love about the game, what the game taught them, and why it's so hard for them to leave. And we've gotten interviews from John Harbaugh, Mike Singletary, Jen Walter, a lot of great people interviewed in those two books. And I think there would be great reads for anyone that, even if you're not a football fan, just great motivational stories about people, you know, seeing what they love, finding their passion and showing you what that means and what that looks like and why it's so hard to not let go of something you really love. And that's just the game of football.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Emery, for coming on. We'll encourage people to go out to footballgameplan.com and to your YouTube channel. As I said, I spent the last few days checking out some of these videos and learned a ton about some prospects that I had never heard of. So that was great. And thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again sometime.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thanks a lot.
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shot Podcast. Matt, yo.
How are you this fine evening?
I am quite good. Thank you. How are you this fine evening?
Fantastic.
This is Tuesday night, the 12th. We're recording, just in case this becomes dated by anything. I don't know if it will.
But this ends up in some type of time capsule.
Yes, a time capsule. That's ridiculous. I don't
remember when that was
the
thing. That was the thing.
Yeah. Time capsules were a big deal. You remember our time capsule from 1984? I think it was.
It's a winner.
It is a winner.
Do people still do those?
You don't have to. It's called the internet.
Ah.
Yeah,
yes.
You don't have to do that anymore because your entire life is just out there for people to see on Facebook, Twitter, a blog. Whatever else. Yeah, you don't have to do that anymore. We'll all just like searching ourselves on Facebook going, oh, that's what I did?
So I don't need to track down terrible. A friend with a camcorder?
No.
So that I can make a video?
No. Though I have to say, the sitting down and making of the video, it's pretty classic. It's pretty classic. So Matt, we do have a question, speaking of people that were in that video, from one of our brothers, Don.
There we go.
He asks on Twitter, so our first official tweet bag of the day.
Tweet bag.
How excited are you for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story? Matt, the trailer dropped this week for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. Matt, have you seen the trailer?
Yes.
Okay, awesome. I was really worried because we hadn't prepped this ahead of time that you're going to be like, no. Oh, well, this is going to be short but pointless.
There's a trailer out for this?
There's a trailer. So, Matt, on the good old QB scale of excitement, 0 to Ty Detmer, how excited are you for Rogue One?
You know, I'm going to fall in with Don, and I'm going to say I'm Steve Young excited.
Okay, that's good.
I think that's a pretty fair assessment.
I am actually going to say the same. So Matt, we have another comment on this, not on Rogue One. By the way, the trailer, you gave it thumbs up. I thought it was a very good trailer, and I think, like it was true with the Episode 7 trailers, I think we know what the story is going to be, and I think it's not going to be what we think it's going to be.
Yeah, we're wrong.
A lot of our assumptions based on the footage will be absolutely wrong. Some will be right, but most will be wrong. Johnny Ashton on Facebook posted this last week or 2 weeks ago. The brilliance of the putting Detmer at the top of the 0 to Detmer scale, he says, is sometimes people will say on a 0, on a scale of 1 to 10, I feel like an 11. Or you need to give 110%, Johnny says. So he says, and I agree with him, Jim McMahon is off the scale option. Matt, do you agree with that?
He's off the charts.
Or do you think Detmer is still the king of the 0 to Detmer scale?
No, I've always looked at it that way, that you could go Jim McMahon excited.
What? No, you haven't. Now you're just making stuff up.
Sure, I'm going to own it now.
I almost said crap, but we're not supposed to say that on the podcast.
I don't think we say crap on
this podcast. The censors will bleep that out for sure.
Yeah, they're not going to put up with that crap.
No, they will not put up with that crap. No. I made this argument from the beginning when Todd said it was the 0 to Detmer scale, and I said it should be the 0 to McMahon scale, and you agreed with Todd that Detmer was at the top. Don't you start waffling now.
Listen, it's not waffling. My behavior is consistent. I agree with the listener. Whatever it is, the most recent listener to speak up said, I'm on board. I'm all in. It's pretty consistent.
Wow, 2016. So are you running for president in 2020? Should we expect to see you on the Republican ticket in 2020?
Me and everybody else, that race will be wide open.
What are you talking about?
It'll be like 37 candidates.
What are you talking about? It's going to be Trump trying for re-election, right? Anyway, all political jokes aside, Matt, let's jump into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the News.
Cougars in the News!
Matt, you can always get awesome, all of your Cougar news, awesome or not awesome, at CougarFan.com. Matt,
mostly awesome, though.
I was trying to find it online as we were starting. BYU baseball is playing the University of Utah, I think, as we speak.
Is everybody okay?
I don't believe.
Can somebody get us word from the field? Is everybody all right?
I've been refreshing my it looks like the game has not finished yet. I don't know what the score is. Hopefully they will win. Obviously, they're ranked 22nd in the country. Matt, percent chance. No, I'm going to do this a different way. Over under a 15% chance that they make the College World Series.
Over under 15% chance,
yes.
You said?
Yes.
I'm going to go.
You're going to go what?
I'm taking the over.
I'm going to take the under. It's hard. It's hard. And there's good teams. I don't know. I don't know. Let's see how they do against Utah, though Utah's not probably the measuring stick this year. But yeah, I have not heard of any fights or anything. It seems pretty.
I'm not sure what the point of having a rivalry game is.
No,
there's not fights.
Yeah, it's are the fans safe, Matt?
No one's safe. I'll tell you who.
Are the children safe?
What about the children? I'll tell you who's not safe is the University of Utah. The score I'm seeing is 12-3 in the bottom of the sixth.
Ah, okay. Okay, good. So we got a live update that you will be listening to.
That will be so far outdated by the time anybody listens to this.
Yes, even by the time I download it. Anyway,
by the time we're done recording, actually.
By the time we're done recording.
I think the game will be final.
It will be final. They've got St. Mary's on the road this weekend. And then, of course, there's a lot of season left, right? There's a lot of season left. So a lot can happen between now and the WCC championships at the end of May. So we'll keep following the Cougar batsman. Should we call him that? Batsman? No?
I don't think you can say that.
Yeah, I think you can. I think you can.
Maybe you can, but maybe you shouldn't.
Maybe you shouldn't. Staying on the diamond, Matt, softball dropped two over the weekend to Loyola Marymount. They host Utah State tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon. Shaquille Walker, Matt, for BYU track, he ran basically like really fast. So he had a record-breaking 1 minute 44.99 seconds in the men's 800-meter race at the Sun Angel Classic. It is the top time so far this year. And he is one of only seven All-Americans in NCAA history to break the 145 mark in the 800 meters.
That's pretty amazing.
My question is, can he catch a football?
Or can he catch up to someone else carrying a football?
Yes. Well, I see pictures of him. I don't think he's a defensive guy. I'm just saying. I don't think he's a defensive guy. Nothing personal. And do you know if he goes by the name Shaq?
I believe he does go by Shaq.
I believe that is correct.
I mean, I don't know him personally. No. We're not on like a first-name basis or anything.
He doesn't call you Matt, and you don't call him Shaq?
But I've heard him referred to as Shaq.
All right. So anyway, Shaq Walker with a phenomenal run there in the 800-meter. Last week.
Just silly. When you think about how fast that is.
That is ridiculous.
That's ridiculous.
Fast. Like, I'd be lucky to run a 400 meter in that right now. Actually, there's no way I run a 400 meter.
No, not even close.
In a .145.
If you would, if you even tried to do that, you would throw up at the end. I'm telling you that right now.
Not only would I throw up, Matt, I'd probably have pulled multiple muscles in every part of my body.
And you'd throw up like halfway through.
Yes. Yeah. It'd be at 200 meters where I collapsed due to injuries and puking. Matt, BYU rugby, they head to Dartmouth. Heads to play Dartmouth, right? Because isn't that at home? They beat Arizona State in the first round of the Penn Mutual Varsity Cup playoffs. They are heading east to play Dartmouth for the second round on April 16th. So I was right in there. They of course are the defending national champions, have won it, four straight years. They've got, a really good chance at a fifth straight, Matt. They have yet to lose. And quite frankly, most of the games have not been close.
Yeah, they're pretty good.
They are pretty good at that rugby stuff. If I'm looking at their schedule, the St. Mary's match was pretty close, 47-25. I remember following that one online. Central Washington had had a little bit of drama to it. Utah Valley played well defensively, relatively speaking, but still lost 25-7. You know what my favorite score of their entire season is?
What's that?
San Diego State 71-0.
Yeah.
I like that.
I knew you'd like that one.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So anyway, they've got, as I said, they beat Arizona State 113-8 and got Dartmouth. And then the semifinal for the Varsity Cup would be a week later on April 23rd. So, Matt, let's look at Cougars in the pros with the first pick
Boo.
Of the NFL draft.
Boo. Sit down, Goodell.
Why does my Goodell, he's sounding like more British each time I do it.
Yeah, you're overacting it.
I am
overacting
it. Which
is not a surprise. It's not a surprise.
No, it's not. And on top of that, it's an insult to England.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd even call it like a British. There you go. Like a British accent. I'm not. It's an accent.
It's an accent of some kind. It's like one of those generic accents. Did you ever see, what's that, After Earth with Will Smith and his son?
Oh, yeah, but maybe.
But they did, like, a fake future accent, and it just threw everybody off. Like, it's a space movie. Just talk like you talk today. We can all roll with that, even though it's unrealistic. We can roll.
Well, but they also do that in, like, Star Wars, where some of the creatures don't speak English,
yes.
But everybody understands each other.
Yes, yes. Yeah,
I've never really – I have to kind of ignore that piece.
Yeah, we roll with it, man. It's okay. It's not it's not that big of a deal.
With the first pick
in the NFL draft. Anyway,
Goodell doesn't even sound like that at all.
No, not at all. He sounds more like this. With the first pick in the NFL draft, they select. I mean, he's more of like a nasally pencil pusher, right?
Yeah,
nasally pencil pusher. Take that, yeah. Roger Goodell.
He pushes pencils.
Inflate your football with that, buddy.
Yeah, inflate this.
Yeah, so Dennis Pitta, Matt, in the Deseret News, they come out and say that he is, after several years of injuries, he's missed most of the last two seasons. According to Mike Garofalo of Fox Sports, he isn't ready to quit, Matt. He is going to participate in off-season workouts, and he's hoping to play for the Ravens or somebody else this next season. Good luck to Dennis
Pitta. Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah, don't call it a comeback. Well, actually, you should call it a comeback because that's what it is, right?
No, he's been here for years.
I saw where you were going, but he actually hasn't. He hasn't been here for years. He's not played for years. Anyway, moving on. Kyle Collinsworth, of course, the NCAA's triple-double king, is going to Virginia this week to compete in the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament. Matt, had you ever heard of such a thing?
No, and I assumed it was in a different Portsmouth.
So did I.
There's a lot of towns named Portsmouth.
Yes, 64th year of this tournament. It invites 64 of the best college basketball seniors to participate in a 4-day, 12-game tournament. Actually, if I remember right, I think Tyler Hawes was in this last year.
So you're saying it's the 64th year they've done this?
Yes.
So this tournament is just a little bit younger than our brother Don.
Well played, sir.
I can't wait to get the text on that one.
Oh, yeah. We'll be getting that in the morning. So notable MVPs from this tournament include Brandon Davies in 2013.
Attaboy.
So we'll get into this later. I am pretty sure that he got absolutely – Kyle Collinsworth got robbed in the Y Awards. We're going to talk about this later. But he got robbed, Matt. He got robbed.
Yeah, I'm trying not to have feelings about the Y Awards, but we'll talk about that.
Oh, I have feelings. We're going to discuss them.
You clearly do. This is going to get
already
weird.
Worked up. It always gets weird. That's what we do. So, Matt, let's talk about men's volleyball now. We're going to have a whole segment today dedicated to men's volleyball. They are the number one seed in the MPSF, right? Did I get those letters in the right order?
Sure.
Sure. They host the Anteaters of UC Irvine on Saturday night. Nice. Irvine is 10-19, 7-15, a disappointing year for them. They started out ranked. They have not played up to what they had hoped to this year. Of course, BYU swept Irvine in six sets, total sets in the two matches on January 29th and 30th in Irvine. Matt, let's talk about the dominance of this team for a second, okay?
Let's discuss that.
Since they lost to Long Beach on the road in mid-January, they have dropped a total of six sets and have lost only one match. I'm not really good at math, but that's really good.
Is that good? So that's good.
And another key stat, their attack percentage, Matt, is 360, which is quite good. And we'll get to some of the individual contributors in a minute. Their opposition attack percentage is 219.
Wow.
They haven't just been winning. They've been dominating in most cases. Matt, we've talked about this before. Are you ready to put – I mean, they've got to do well here in the playoffs. It's time to talk about them as one of the best teams ever, right, at BYU?
I mean, the consistency and the pure dominance, right? I mean, it's really unbelievable. Yeah. They're clearly a piece of that discussion, and I mean, you could make the argument. You can make an argument here that they're running away with it.
Yeah, and again,
but they've got to finish this.
They still have to finish it, and they will have to go through a couple of good teams, including I imagine UCLA at some point, who did play them well, though they took both matches earlier this month in Los Angeles. So Matt, let's talk a little bit about the stats here for a second for men's volleyball. They have, let's talk about some of the best players. So Ben Patch, he's the sophomore, 6'9", opposite side hitter, led the team with 319 kills, which is 4.31 per set, which is pretty amazing. 384 attack percentage, which wasn't even the highest on the team. 83 digs, 13 aces. Again, I said sophomore Ben Patch. Brendan Sander, his brother, is kind of famous.
You may have heard of him.
Might have heard of his brother. Also a sophomore, 6'4", outside hitter, which is amazing to me. Nowadays, in the modern volleyball game, you have to have some massive hops to be a 6'4", outside hitter. But he's got them. 268 kills this year, 380 attack percentage. That's going to be kind of a ongoing theme, how high these attack percentages are. 97 digs and 24 aces, which doesn't even lead the team. And then Jake Langlois. I'm saying that wrong. All right. Langlois?
Langlois,
there you go. He's a junior, 6'10 outside hitter, 246 kills, 321, a pedestrian 321 attack percentage, actually lower than the team average. 112 digs, 28, leads the team with 28 aces.
112 digs and 28 aces.
Yes.
Like, that's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. Leo Durkin is the 6'4 sophomore setter, 912 sets. That's 10.5 per match, per set. So sets, ups per set. That can be confusing, but follow along.
That was confusing. But I just have one question. Is Durkin from Leverkin?
Gosh, I don't know.
Or is he from Hurricane?
He's from Hurricane, I think. No, he's not. He's from California, I think. I'd have to go back to...
So I was way off.
So 113 digs. Here's the amazing thing. So he did not lead the team in digs. But here you have the setter at 113 digs, and you had Jake with 112.
Yeah.
As an outside hitter. Obviously, Jake is that all-around guy, right? He's not letting us, besides the aces, he's not leading the team in anything, but he is, I would say they're Kyle Collinsworth. Like, he does everything well.
Yeah, he's got, if you look at his stat line, he's up in, I don't want to say he's competitive with, right? But he's up in that upper tier in almost every category. Well, that may be a little bit of an overstatement, but he's contributing all over the place, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes. And that's the whole thing to me, Matt, is that they have right now some extremely talented players. They have a deep roster, but more than they have depth is they have some of the best players in the nations. In the nation. And that's a big, I mean, I get it. There's not that many teams. It's not like competing necessarily in, say, women's volleyball even, or certainly men's basketball or football as far as the number of quality teams. But that being said, this is an awesome team, and I haven't gotten to watch them as much as I wanted to this year, but every match I watch, I think back on those teams we watched when we were there, and I think if you went in the time machine, it would be a fascinatingly awesome match to watch.
Oh, I'd love it if there were a way to do that. That would be fun. Yeah,
doing those Ryan Millar-led teams would be a lot of fun.
Ozzy Antonetti.
So
those Saturday, were fun teams.
Those were awesome teams. So Saturday, again, they play UC Irvine in Provo. They will get Thursday the 21st, assuming they win that. And I think, Matt, we're both predicting a victory there.
Yes.
Do they drop a set?
No.
No, they do not. I agree with you there. The winner of match one, which is theirs, will play the winner of match two, which is Santa Barbara and Stanford. I don't really have a preference who we play there. I guess I always love beating Stanford.
I think I'd just rather see Santa Barbara here.
So the championship of the MPSF championship would be Saturday the 23rd. So we're a week and a half off from that. Matt, if we have any show next week, which I'm not sure we are going to take next week's off, it will basically be us inviting Jerem Jordan to talk volleyball. So stay tuned. We may do that next week. We'll see.
Sounds like a winning formula to me.
Sounds like it is. So anyway, Matt's men's volleyball, we wish him best of luck this weekend against UC Irvine, though quite frankly, I don't think they need our luck.
Nope.
So Matt, I had an interesting question on Facebook from Dave Broderick. Dave asked, BYU is dominant in men's volleyball and rugby, which two sports we just talked about. What is so different about football? How does BYU get elite talent for those sports but not football? Matt, I've got an answer in my head when I saw his question, but I'm sure you do too. What are your thoughts?
So when I look at let's look at these a little bit separately, but the reasons, in my opinion, are the same. So men's volleyball is a little bit it's a regional sport in the sense that it's not big all over the country.
No,
but it is big in places that are geographically close to BYU, where there's a lot of people who have ties to BYU that are interested in going to school there, and I think that is helpful.
Yes, very helpful.
So the other and so with rugby, it is similar in the sense, and I'll talk about what I mean in just a second. But rugby is also kind of a niche sport, a niche interest, and what you get at BYU is you get a large international population of students from places where rugby is popular. You also have a large school where there's a lot of people who maybe could have played other sports at smaller schools but chose to go to BYU instead, and then they find an opportunity to learn the game of rugby, but it's somebody that's got some raw talent, and when they get into the mix with some people who've got some real skill, you know, then you can develop some of those guys, you know, I don't want to say bench players, but that type of, you understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
There's some opportunities to develop some talent there because of that mix of the raw athletic ability with people who have real solid rugby pedigrees.
Yes.
So that's the kind of combination there. And it's the fact that BYU just happens to land in the right place for those kind of those niche sports to pick up. You know, if you look at like, you know, there's other sports that fit that type of description where BYU is not quite as successful. You know, like men's lacrosse has had some success, you know, as a club sport.
Women's
for
soccer.
Slightly different reasons. Okay, women's soccer. When you get into men's volleyball and rugby, those two sports in particular, I think that's what you're looking at. And so when you try and translate that over to football, football is just a completely different beast.
So I agree with everything you said. To me, the problems, the advantages BYU has, as you pointed out, in either both of those sports are related but different. In volleyball, we just happen to be in the right geography. Most of the best volleyball teams are in the West. There are some really good volleyball teams in the East, but there's pockets, and we happen to be sitting in a pocket that is perfect. We also have the tradition. historically, that it makes it easier over time to recruit, right? And I'm not talking about the good 80s football. I'm talking about perennial national championship contenders. And that's true in rugby as well, which is the, I'll call it the Alabama factor, okay? Why does Alabama get such great recruits? Part of it is because they're Alabama. And in those sports, we're Alabama. Now, maybe in volleyball, that's not quite true. Maybe we're Ohio State. I don't know what the best football analogy is for that. In rugby, we're Alabama. We're actually bigger than Alabama. We're more dominant. And it's such a small pool of players you're pulling from, all the points you made before also about other good athletes that end up on campus. The other part is there's no recruiting in rugby like there is in basketball and football. There aren't recruiting services out watching high school club rugby matches and rating these players on every conceivable scale. Basically, what I'm trying to say, Matt, is it has the dominance we have in volleyball and rugby is not translatable to football and basketball. It's just not.
Yeah, the situations are just so drastically different.
Yes, we are not Alabama in football, and we are not Duke in basketball. We just don't have the cachet. We're not in the right conference. All those things that aren't true in volleyball. In volleyball, we're in the right conference, right? In rugby, we are the team, you know. Us and Cal pretty much over the last 10 years, only one other team has won a rugby cup, you know, besides us and Cal. I mean, so it's so different. Matt, Johnny Dangerman on Twitter has a question from the tweet bag as well.
Tweet bag.
How do you cope with the off season? He says, once volleyball and rugby end, I won't know what to do with myself. Advice? Question mark.
I don't know what to tell you. My answer to this used to be EA Sports NCAA football. But then they took that away from me, too.
Yes, they broke your heart.
Yeah, so, you know, the best way to deal with the long, cold, dark off season is highlight videos.
Yes, highlight videos, and I would also say baseball, but I know a lot of our listeners aren't huge baseball fans. But
no, that tends to not get, you know, if Johnny Dangerman, that's the way I want to say that from now on. If he was familiar with baseball, don't ever do that again. if he were already familiar with baseball, he'd already have the answer to this question. So I'm sensing by the fact that he's asking the question that baseball's not a part of his life.
Or he's saying he's just talking about his BYU sports fandom, right? Not sports fandom in general.
I could see that. Yeah. So if that's the case, you're looking at rebroadcasts of football games on BYU TV and highlight videos. That's all you got.
That's right. That's all you got. So Matt on...
And the Rise and Shout podcast.
Now, we are a little late on this. There was the Y Awards on March 30th, but we had some packed shows. We've got a little time today. The Y Awards, they've been doing this... I don't know how long they've been doing it. It's been a while now. We talked about a little bit in previous, but we've never spent a lot of time. I've wanted to because I love awards and debating and saying why they were given to the wrong people.
Oh, you love this
stuff. I love this stuff.
You would come up with your own award show, hand out awards, and then do like a post-mortem where you would argue why all of your decisions were wrong.
I would. I absolutely love this stuff. So, Matt, let's go down the list and tell me either they got it right or they got it wrong or you don't care. Okay, I'll give you that option as well. All right.
Oh, see, but I can't say that because some of these I don't. I'm just going to be honest with you. But I that's me.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not. Mean for me to admit it. No. You cannot have an opinion. I mean, I know that's very un-Mangum-like in our family to not have an opinion. But you can technically not have an opinion about something. Nah, that's just stupid. Never mind. I'm taking that.
Who wants to listen to 30 minutes of me not having an opinion?
30 minutes? We're already at 30 minutes. All right. So, Matt, female rookie...
Oh, I was just thinking we were going to talk about the Y Awards for the next 30 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hope it doesn't take quite that long. I think
we'll trim that down a little bit.
Lose some people along the way. Now, the confusing part about this is from April 2015 to March 2016.
See, that's just confusing.
They should be doing this I know why they do it at the time they do, but they should be doing this in May, right? Anyway.
Yeah, that's all. That would make sense, but yeah, you can't.
But people leave campus. I get why they do it when they do it. All right. Or actually, why don't they do it in the fall for the year before?
Well, you can't do that. Like, you got
the seniors are all gone.
See, and some of them are, I mean, they're at work, they're playing in professional leagues, they're playing in Europe.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
Started jobs.
All right, right.
All sorts of issues bringing them
back. So it's probably okay where it is. Female Rookie of the Year, they gave to Maddie Sitaway from soccer. Matt, I have no problem with that award.
I have no problem with that award.
I think they got it right.
And I like her scoring her first career goal against Utah.
Always awesome. Always awesome. So Male Rookie of the Year, they give it to our namesake, Tanner Mangum. Matt, I think they got it right.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say I think they got it right here. The close second for me here, I hesitate to even say it. Yeah, Sander is my close second.
Yes, and Nick Emery also getting votes. The other candidates for this that were finalists were Dallin Farnsworth in cross country and Colton Shaver in baseball, who also is quite good, and Connor Sterling in swimming. But I might have given it to Brendan Sander, but I think Tanner probably is the right one.
I think you could defend Sander, yeah.
Yes, yes, you can definitely defend Sander. Comeback Player of the Year, they give it to Nick Kurtz on the football team, Matt. He, of course, did not play in 2014, I think, but a couple of snaps, and then caught passes in 11 consecutive games, and was very good last year, 39 receptions, 578 yards. I say they got this one right.
I think they got this one wrong.
Oh, and who would you have given this to?
I would have gone with another finalist on this list, Nate Austin.
Not a terrible choice, my friend. Not a terrible choice.
I think you're looking at a guy that came back, fought through some things, was a presence on this team the way that he needed it. And then that awesome block,
yes.
The Gonzaga block.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was awesome.
Fantastic.
You look at some of the other things we'll talk about, I think, in a minute as we walk through it. But Nate Austin has done some great things and will be a piece of BYU basketball lore for a long time. That's a great comeback story, in my opinion.
Okay. You may have even convinced. Nah, I'm sticking with Kurt. Outstanding Senior Male Athlete Award was given to Bronson Kafusi on the football team. Matt, did they get it right or wrong?
I'm going to say they also got this one wrong.
They got it way wrong. It's nothing against Bronson. It's Kyle Collinsworth.
But what I don't know here, and because it's really none of my business, is that a component of this award is clearly centered around academic performance. I have no idea what Kyle Collinsworth's
GPA is. Oh, he's a great
student. I could look that up somewhere, I'm sure. But if you look at Kafusi's majoring in statistics and analytics, I mean, that's a difficult subject matter.
No,
right?
He is
clearly very smart guy.
I've heard a very, very smart guy. Yes, absolutely.
But Kyle Collinsworth was pretty dominant at his position and stuck out on a national level. I think you got to go there.
But, I it's not that Bronson's not worthy. He certainly is worthy of an award. I thought when I was going through this originally that, they're going to give him like some other award, and so they're spreading it out. But they don't, so we'll get back to that in a second. So let's move on to the next award, Matt, is Lou Wallace Outstanding Senior Female Athlete Award given to Sarah Chambers in soccer. I have no problem with this one. But I did wonder if I, because it's all, no, wait a second. I do. This one is another one I have a problem with. She wasn't even listed on the finalists. Where's what's her face from basketball? Why can't I find her name right now?
Yeah. I wondered about that one too. Right. Alt.
Yeah.
I don't know.
She was a senior.
I don't understand what happened there.
I don't know why she wasn't at least on the list, but Sarah Chambers had a fantastic career. So I guess I don't have a problem with that. I guess I would have maybe chosen somebody different, but you?
I would have gone. I'm with you. I'm wondering where the rest of the list is.
Yeah. Yeah. Walk on of the year goes to McKenna Santiago on volleyball. I don't actually have an opinion on this one, I guess. Good for her. Clap, clap.
We'll take it. Take it home. Hang it up on the mantle.
Memorial, the Cougar Club Memorial Award. This is given to an outstanding junior male or female athlete with high scholarly achievement. Again, I don't know that I am qualified to. They give it to Amy Boswell on volleyball. Clap, clap.
She's clearly achieved high scholarness.
The Leona Holbrook Spirit of Sport Award, that is given to senior female athlete whose best exemplifies the true spirit of sports in athletic and life. Given to Kylie Maida in basketball, clap, clap.
Yep.
Dale McCann Spirit Award for the men was given to Nate Austin.
Yay! I'll take it, and I think they got this one right.
Yes, I think they got that one right. Michael Wadsworth was also on the football team was a finalist, but I think Austin was the winner. Female crowd pleaser. Now this is the award that's dear to my heart because I won this award in high school.
Yes,
the
yes,
crowd
you did.
Favorite at Norwell High School for basketball, which basically meant I played very little and got in sometimes at the end.
And the students loved to chant your name.
Yes, yes, they did. They gave it to Rachel Boaz on the soccer team. I would agree with that one.
You know what? I leaned Kalani Purcell on this one, but I can live with where
she's
they landed.
Too good,
defendable.
But yes, I would have been fine with Kalani as well. Male crowd pleaser was Devon Blackman in football. No way. I'm not with this one.
You know what? I think that where this comes from is towards the end of the season. There was a lot of buzz around him.
Yeah, for him and to catch his first touchdown.
The fans got really excited about it. There was a lot of talk around it. So I think that's why they landed where they did. So what would you do with it? You give it to Fisher or you have somebody else in mind?
I would have given it to Reyes, the other finalist on the volleyball team. That's who I would have given it to. I think he more exhibits what this award kind of means. That's why I like Boaz on soccer and Reyes. They're contributors, right? They're not like me. They're not just somebody that came off the bench once or twice. But somebody that, like, you know, has that thing about them that everybody just, like, when they do something, everybody gets excited. I get what you're saying about Blackman. I'm just, eh. Male Athlete of the Year Award. It's hard to argue with this one, Matt. Shaquille Walker of track he's an amazing athlete. I would have given it to Collinsworth, but you can't give it to the football and basketball guys all the time, so...
Yeah, I think you got this one right, and the performance that we talked about earlier on this show wasn't even part, it took place after this. But you look at a guy that's doing things that only a handful of people have done.
Yes.
He runs away with this award.
So Matt, female.
You see what I did there?
Yeah, I saw what you did there. He ran away very fast. Female athlete of the year, Alexa Gray on volleyball. Did they get it right or wrong?
Well, what I'm interested to see is finally we get under finalists and we see Lexi in here. And I would have leaned that way. But I think you can defend Alexa. I think it's one of those two. The rest of the finalists I see are kind of an honorable mention. But the fact that, you know, that she doesn't appear anywhere else on here is a little bit shocking to me.
A little weird. She's the all-time leading scorer in WCC basketball history. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's because the year ended weird for them. I don't know if that. I don't even know who votes for this stuff, right?
But you look at kind of the Alexa's resume. It's a pretty similar type of stuff. I mean, back to back WCC Player of the Year. I mean, she's done. You know.
Oh, she's worthy.
Number
of the
two
award.
Kills per set leader nationally in 2015. Yeah. I mean, she's pretty
worthy.
Dominant.
I don't actually have a problem with her winning the award. I'm just surprised that Rydalch didn't end up with something out of the night. It seems a little weird to me.
And as we've gone through, this is the only place where her name appears.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. Matt, let's go back and talk about the NFL draft. And this time I'll do it with a nasal voice. With the first pick in the NFL draft, the Buffalo Bills select...
Sit down, Goodell!
The Buffalo Bills select Bronson Fousey, Matt. I'm just kidding, but he has been tied to the Buffalo Bills this week. He's visiting 8 different teams, including the Broncos, Packers, Jets, Falcons, Colts, Bills, Steelers, and Patriots.
Go Matt, Pats!
Go Pats. How disappointed are you going to be if the Jets or Bills draft Bronson Kafusi?
I mean, it could be worse. It could be the Browns, but that's a pretty bad situation for anybody.
Yes, it could be. It definitely could be worse, Matt. A couple of things to note on his NFL job application at the Players Tribune.
That was interesting.
Interesting. So he prefers Michael Jordan to crying Jordan. By the way, I'm going to go get on my soapbox here for a second. The crying Jordan thing needs to stop.
Yeah, it's done. It's run its course.
It's dumb. He's one of the greatest athletes of all time. And the fact that there is all of you people putting crying Jordan heads on memes are adding to the fact that my children may end up knowing him for being having a crying head on things instead of his place in athletic lore. So just stop. Just it's stupid. So he selected the right answer there. He likes that real Jordan ahead of that. Matt, he said you should watch his game film from Cincinnati. I did watch the highlights. It's a good game to watch if you want Bronson Kafusi highlights.
That's anything, the right one to watch.
Anything else on his application besides his pretty darn good cougar drawing?
I thought the cougar drawing really is what pushed me over the top. You're hired.
You're hired. And his creative touchdown celebration, if he knew he wouldn't get fined, was have the ref throw him an alley-oop on the goalpost.
That's a pretty good idea, actually. That's right up there with the Riley Nelson high five.
Yeah, that would.
The Riley Nelson high five actually happened, so yes. It's a little bit better.
Yeah, so I guess it is better. It's not theoretical. Matt, so you haven't listened to this yet, but Emory Hunt came on the show, NFL draft guru, and he said he's not very high on Bronson Kafusi. He wouldn't draft him, though I think he will end up getting drafted. I just think his stock is where it's at. Matt, percent chance Bronson Kafusi doesn't hear his name called during the 3 days of the NFL draft?
I'm going to go with a 45% chance. You know, I think that he's going to be appealing to a certain segment of teams, and it's going to depend on what else is on their board and where they decide to concentrate their picks.
Yeah.
And depending on how that lands, he may slide down.
Yeah.
Because he's not one of these guys that's going to be appealing to every team across the NFL.
No, he's not. And I think Emory did a good job of pointing out from a position standpoint why that is. I think it's lower than that. I actually think it's only 20% that he doesn't get drafted. The thing is, right now, we're 2 weeks away. I've seen him not in projections. I've seen him as high as a fourth-round pick. So I think there's a wide range of possibilities. It all depends on how much people fall in love with them in the next 2 weeks and whether they say, well, I just can't wait till the last few rounds or free agency. I got to scoop him up now. It's whether they see potential left, right? I mean, he's an older prospect because all BYU prospects are older.
It's because of those mission trips.
Dang mission trips that give him such an advantage over other athletes. You know,
I'm surprised the NCAA doesn't come out and make a rule about that.
Yeah, they should. They should. Yeah,
they should. They're making all sorts of crazy, stupid.
Oh my gosh! Another like restriction of transfer thing in the Big Ten.
You see this thing about the camps? I'm losing my mind about.
I am too. Like,
I can't. I can't even stand.
Why can't Harbaugh run a camp in Florida?
How does this help the student athlete in any meaningful way?
It doesn't.
Not at all.
No, it's all about the SEC trying to protect their turf from
it is so
Harbaugh.
Stupid. I mean, do you know what I want to start doing? I'm going to start a Twitter account that is going through the NCAA rule book, talking about how the NCAA violates their own rules.
Oh, they're terrible.
It's going to be great.
Yeah, they're all about the student athlete. So, Matt, let's move on to – I think I had a thought there that I lost, but it's okay. We bagged on the NCAA, so it's worth it. We are running out of time. Mitch Matthews – Emory Hunt loves him, Matt. Is he a sleeper? We've got a bunch of teams seem to be interested in him. Matt, I think he gets drafted.
I think he does, but...
I think it's late. Know. But I think there's a greater than 50% chance he hears his name. And if you had told me that a month ago, I would have said, you need to take off your blue goggles.
But that's what's crazy about the draft. Teams get weird as it gets close. And they're no longer looking at film, and they're looking at other things. They're looking at performance at combines and pro days and interviews and those types of things. And I don't know, and we've talked about this before, I don't know that Mitch Matthews has had a chance in the past couple months to show that he's improved over the couple of things that are really the knocks on him. And so to hear this discussion about his draft stock going up without an opportunity to show that he's fixed those things, it's a little bit weird for me.
No, it's not weird to me because of this, because of what he did in the 40. Once he did that on the BYU Pro Day, I thought there was a chance that this could happen because one of the knocks on him when you read scouting reports was speed, which I believed was true. But after you see that time, you go, it's not speed. Now what you're talking about is his ability to get off press coverage, which, of course, he obviously can't show that now. All it is the film from his career. And there's a lot of games, including Michigan, where he really struggled on press coverage to get off the line of scrimmage. And, you know, Emory said that's his thing, but Emory believes that's fixable. So maybe, you know, maybe he is 5 years from now going to still be in the NFL and we're all going to be going, oh, of course he is, you know?
Well, you definitely can't teach speed. You might be able to teach somebody to get through the press coverage, but you can't teach speed, so maybe that's it.
All right, Matt, so now I've got a speed thing for you. We are going to each draft two quarterbacks. I will give you the first selection, then in the snake style, I will get the next two selections, and then you'll get the fourth selection. We're drafting quarterbacks eligible for the draft this year. Okay.
Quarterbacks eligible for the draft this year. I'm going first.
You're going first. Who is your best quarterback in the draft?
Connor Cook.
Connor Cook. Wow. I did not see that coming.
Oh, I already regret my decision.
Yes, you should, because I wouldn't have picked him. He's not on my list. I like Jared Goff as my top. I'm not a Carson Wentz guy. I think he's got big-time bust potential. And then I'm going to go crazy, and it's only because Emory convinced me to do it. Cardale Jones.
Dang it.
And who are you going to take with your last pick?
I don't know what I'm going to do now.
Go with Wentz? Hackenberg?
I'm not sold on Hackenberg. I'm not sold on Wentz. You'd probably go Dak Prescott at that point, but Cardale Jones. I like Cardale Jones a lot, but you already took him. And I like Kevin Hogan.
Yeah.
But I probably go Dak.
Yeah, I almost.
Yeah, I'll go Dak Prescott here.
I almost wanted to go there was a quarterback that Dallin Williams from Dartmouth that Emory talked up at the beginning of this show, but I wasn't that brave. Now I'm just copying what our guest said. So, well, anyway, Matt, that is it.
Travis Wilson didn't make the list.
Travis Wilson did not, interestingly enough, make Emory's list or ours. Shocker. Surprise. Shocker. Well, thanks everybody for listening. I would encourage you, if you like the program, to go to iTunes and leave us a very pleasant review. So let people know that you think the Rise and Shout podcast is awesome. We will probably take next week off. We may be back with a short volleyball session, but if not, we'll be back in 2 weeks. You can follow the conversation on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout, on Facebook at facebook.com/RiseAndShout. Thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
God, where were you when I needed you?